And good Friday morning. It is a getaway Friday here. Friday, November the 19th, 2021, 18 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship, heard live Friday morning, 11:15 a.m., repeated on Sunday morning at 8:10 a.m., and Wednesday afternoon at 3:10 p.m. The Community Christian Fellowship Sunday sermon airs here on this station, 12:15 on Sunday afternoons, and you can hear any of the sermons as well as any of the back episodes of this program online, WWGH1071.com. Go to Program Archives. The Pastor Spot is the first one under there. And if you look under the tabs, you will see Community Christian Fellowship Sunday Sermon. Click that tab, and they're all dated and all there for your listening pleasure at your convenience. We'll now turn it over to the host of the show, Pastor Steve Whitaker, 6 days away from Turkey Day.
Yes, it is. Hey, one thing, I want to apologize to everyone that in the last couple of weeks we've had some hiccups on the Community Christian Fellowship Facebook page as far as the sermon being played on there, and there was no sound. And then a week ago, Adam got a message sent to him to upload that there was no sound also. So anyway, good to have everyone this morning. And yes, we are definitely how many days did you say?
Six.
6 days away. I guess I should know that it's Friday. 6 days away from Thanksgiving. And today, I would like to talk about things to be thankful for. And during this time, you can dial 339-944 and call in and let us know what you're thankful for. I'd love to hear from you. And I pray that there's something that all of you out there are thankful for. Last week, I talked about things to be thankful for, and I kind of carried that over into Sunday's message with five things that I was thankful for. And this week, I'm going to carry that message over to five more things. I told them that I'd only go to 10, but there's still a lot more left. And this morning, I want to kind of bump into those 10, that next group of them, and talk about that a little bit. The things that I'm thankful for that I think that we can all take great pleasure in. And one thing that I want to be thankful for is, of all things, people don't usually think of this right off the bat, or maybe they do, is our senior citizens. How does that sound? You know, how many people, when they say, what do you want to be thankful for? Oh, I want to be thankful for our senior citizens. But you know what? If you really think about this, first of all, I want to make it clear that God was very, very proactive, so to speak, when it came to senior citizens being an active part of what he decided to bring to us. I don't think that any of the scripture was ever written by anyone that was very, very young. Matter of fact, most of them were very, very old when they wrote scripture, and when he inspired them to write what they did. Also, we are taught to respect our elders and listen to our elders. You know, that term elder has some meaning to it. If you go to most churches today, depending on the denomination, they have what are called elders. And elders don't mean necessarily that they're all old, but it does mean that they're people that have been around for an extended period of time in the faith, and they're people that you can go through for advice and trust, and they direct and they oversee. And there's a good reason for that, is because they are older. And you know, when I think of our senior citizens, there's so much, Scott and Frank's here too, there's so much that we can learn from those that have gone before us. And I really feel that it's kind of a sad thing that today we're in a culture that worships youth. Not so much in times past. You know, the old songs at Christmas time, like over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. Everybody couldn't wait to go to grandma's house because it was just something about the nostalgia of going to those that were before us, learning from them, listening to the stories. You know, the young women in the kitchen learning from grandma how to make the dressing just right for the turkey, or how to glaze the ham just right, or how does she bake. You know, grandma's always made those perfect pie crusts that no one knows how to make anymore. And those are just some tiny examples. But Frank and I were talking this morning. I said, Frank, does anyone make Waldorf salad anymore? And yeah, but they put whipped cream in it. They've messed it all up now. But anyway, everything changes. But sometimes we need to hang on to things. I was kind of chuckled this morning. I was looking at social media, and somebody posted a picture of four grandmothers, and they were standing there in their very solid, comfortable, square-heeled shoes with longer, light flower dresses on, and they had gray hair, and they were just a pretty little grandma picture, and it said, this is what grandmas used to look like. And I got a kick out of that, because it's very possible today to see grandmas running around in a miniskirt or in a halter top. I mean, honestly, it's changed that much, but we're worshiping youth so much that we have forgotten the quality of old, the quality of age, the things that we learn, what we can pick up from people. A matter of fact, we're in a generation right now where, unfortunately, a lot of younger people are even being kind of taught or turned to the fact that maybe we're just silly old people. Maybe a lot of traditional stuff is just of no value anymore. A lot of the things that we hold dear to us, our traditional values, aren't so important. Family is not celebrated like it used to be. And I think that with the destruction of family, I guess is the best way to put it, we're seeing a lot more societal problems that the family used to handle very well, and it eliminated a lot of those problems, or it dealt with them, whereas today they're not being dealt with. I think that we're dealing with a lot of insecurities because we don't have the family structure that we used to, and a lot of that goes back to elderly people. So I'm going to ask Scott first, and then I'm going to ask Frank so that you can hear them. Frank, you'll need to get near your microphone. They won't hear you back there. Give me an example of an elderly person. I know you've got so many because you talk to them regularly, especially celebrities. And this doesn't necessarily have to be one of those celebrities. But if you would, give me an example of an elderly person that really was instrumental in you learning from because of their age and wisdom.
Now, dead or alive?
Oh, dead, alive.
Dead,
alive.
Doesn't matter. Well, there are two. Now, if we're talking about... Well, three. I got to say three. Because my grandmother, first of all, my mother's mother, we just had a very good relationship. And, you know, she was never a lady who sat down and she didn't say, I'm teaching you this. You know, you just were around her and you picked it up. And she was just one of those women who what I loved about her was she was not a grandmother who had an apron and things of that nature. She worked all her life. She was a union steward. She was a busy, busy, very smart woman, always handled the bills in her household, wasn't in the kitchen baking, although she could do that, but she certainly wasn't wearing a mini skirt, but she wore pants. I don't know. You know, she wore a dress to a funeral, so definitely her. Madge Cooper was the first person I really came across in radio, and again, she never said, I'm teaching you this, but she did great interviews, and she was well ahead of her time when it came to that. She's a wonderful lady.
So let me ask you a question about both those ladies. Do you think that a lot of the wisdom they had and the things that they had came with their age and the time and as they grew over the years themselves?
Oh, I think it did. I think my... you know what was interesting about my grandmother? My grandmother's mother, her who I never knew, died when my grandmother was like 3 or 4 years old. So she never knew her birth mother. And she really didn't like her stepmother. They didn't have a good relationship. But she had 5 kids, my grandmother. And she was the best mother. So you think, where did she learn that? Because she didn't have a mother. Her mother died. She had no memory of her mother, no pictures, nothing. Because the stepmother came in and ran all that off pretty quickly after the mother died.
You know, I think though, Scott, in that day and age, in that time, there were so many people being good examples of that, that she probably had a lot of people in her outer circle that she could pick up from too.
Well, I'll tell you the odd thing about Madge. Madge had no kids throughout her life. So her relationship with younger people was interesting because a lot of younger people were around Madge even long after she retired. She lived to be 99.
Wow.
And her last spot on the radio, we did the charity ball. Matter of fact, there's a picture of her right there. That's me and Madge in the red. And you know how old Madge is in that picture?
Doing
how
that old?
97.
Wow.
She's 97, still doing the charity ball with me. So she worked right up till she was 97.
That's fantastic.
And but she didn't have kids. But yet she related very well to younger people.
She had kids.
Yeah, she did.
Weren't biological.
She did. And of course, the third I can't leave out is Charlie Evers, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I worked with him for 15 years. And again, it was we broadcast completely different.
Everyone learned from Charlie.
Yeah, you had to. And he's just one of those guys who was a great person.
Frank, is that looking at you? Yeah, there's Frank. Good morning, Frank. Frank, get on that microphone. Hey, Frank, give me an example of an elderly person that was instrumental in your life.
I would say there's two, actually. One was my great-grandfather. Never knew my grandfathers, but my great-grandfather on my father's side was a farmer from Athens, Ohio. Peach Ridge is named after his peach grove. And he was very, I only met him a few times, but I was about 5 years old, four or five, and he wore a three-piece suit, and he had ten sons, a couple daughters, but he even farmed in a suit.
Ah, so maybe that's where they got the guy on Green Acres from.
Probably so. That could have been. And the other one was my Aunt Tenny. My Aunt Tenny was
just passed, didn't she?
She just passed. She was 97, and she passed. And a world of wisdom that she had, biblical wisdom also. She taught me how to make pickled corn. Now, this is not corn that's on a cob. This was pickled corn, and it was a brine. You didn't add vinegar. It was salt and water.
They learned to do with what they had, didn't they?
Oh, sure. But I think the most important thing that she passed down to as a legacy to me and to her children was the amount of faith that she had in Christ. And the, you know, when we recite the verse, I can't remember.
I understand.
About substance.
Yeah.
Faith having substance.
Yeah.
You could actually see the amount of faith that she had. And everybody called Aunt Tenny when somebody was sick, and she had a prayer group.
Faith is the evidence of things not seen, the substance. Faith is the evidence of things not seen. Yes.
Exactly. So those are the two people I remember.
Well, that's great. I, myself, with me, there's so many. I maybe have been an odd little kid, but I had a lot of old friends growing up. There was a lady next door for me when I was about 7 or 8. My name was Mrs. Fay. I would go talk to her and listen to her forever. And recently, in the last few years, I had a dear friend, Becky Newell, who just passed away a couple years ago. She's a friend to all of us. But I've got a friend now that I don't see him as often as I used to, is Ray James. Ray is just turned 87, and he's full of wisdom. But I can just go on and on. When I was a kid, there was a man that I looked up to his wisdom by the name of Bob Charrington, interestingly enough. I love talking to my brother-in-law, John's dad, Alfred Conan. Alfred had spent his entire adult life in the Philippines as a missionary. Matter of fact, he was stationed there in World War II as a chaplain, and that's why he decided to stay there. But, you know, the list just goes on and on. And then even some characters. My dad had an old guy, and my dad raced horses, and there was an old guy in the barn that was kind of a groom, and a trainer and a groom, and I suppose he was in his, when I was a kid, he was in his late 80s. His name was Bill Titler. He actually had ridden with Pancho Villa. So we're talking about old, but he was such a card. Probably didn't learn virtuous things from Bill, but I did learn a lot of interesting stuff from Bill. But anyway, those that have gone before us, and if you look at most cultures, right up until 20, 40, 50 years ago, and still in a lot of countries, it's the elderly people that are the leaders, are the ones they take their keys from on everything they do, the ones they go to for trust, the ones they go for everything. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is they have lived life and they have the experience of life. Look, if I'm going to get my car fixed and I have two different people that are going to fix it, one of them is a kid right out of mechanic school, and another guy is about 60 years old that has been doing it his entire life and stayed up on all the mod and kept working and studying and growing and knowing, who am I going to go get my car fixed by? If I have a choice, well, I think you know the answer to that. And it's that experience. You know, when you look in the, some of you probably don't remember this if you're young, but all of us older people do, the Yellow Pages. I know they're still out there, but do people even look at phone books anymore? I don't know. Imagine they use their phone. But if you would look through the Yellow Pages, in the ads you always see 60 years experience, 30 years in business, 20 years in business. And there's a reason people do that, because of longevity brings experience, it brings sense, it brings trust. You can be trustworthiness. You know, the Bible tells us that the secret to a long life is honoring your mother and father. So there's two things to be told there, just to be said about that. One thing is, if you honor those that have gone before you, your parents, those before you, you will have a long life. But we think about this sometimes. So you say, well, how could God have meant that? Because I know somebody that was treated their mom and dad perfectly, did everything they were supposed to, and they died at 20. Well, I think that sometimes we have to look at the principle behind what's being said. And it's the fact that we talk to our elders, our parents, and we listen to their wisdom and we take their guidance. And if you listen to their wisdom and if you take their guidance, you're probably going to have a pretty stable long life. You see what I mean? And I think that that's a lot of it. So we not only listen to them because we're commanded to, but we listen to them because it's the smart and the right thing to do, and we want our outcome to be better. I think that I have learned more from older people than anything else in my life. Some of my best teachers, I know when I was in seminary school, they were older than, all of them were older than me, but I mean, the wisdom that comes from some of those older ones that have been around is wonderful. That does not mean that all old people are wise.
Well, and that's, you know, that's an interesting thing right now, and I've had this conversation with people, and it's not a blanket statement, but you know, anybody right now, 75 and up, there's something about that generation that is very interesting. And the people who are about to be that generation, the people who are 55 to 75 right now, there's something about that group that they're not being as philanthropic as the people in front of them were. They're not being as mentoring as the people in front of them were. They're not, oh, and I should mention Mary Ellen Withrow, who just, what she has taught me is you can be a really, really big deal in life and come home. And just
that's a good
and,
one.
And
isn't
come home and just fit right
and
in.
You don't have to. You don't have to be stressed because you're not a big deal
right.
anymore.
You do. But she, even the people who you go, she does her own grocery shopping.
And
you
Mary
know?
Ellen, I don't mean to say that you're not a big deal.
I know what you. I, she knows.
She
what you
knows
mean.
What
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. But you know, she goes and does her own grocery shopping in the Kroger in Marion, Ohio. You know,
the people that knew her back when she was on the school board at Elgin, and before she, you know, those of you who, you know, Mary Ellen was of course our Treasury Secretary for the United States under Bill Clinton, but she, those same people that knew her back then, see her in the store now.
Well, and that's not something she ever sat and said something to anybody about, but, I mean, boy, you look at that, and there's a woman who has schools named for her in the area, but you know what, I've never known her to turn any, or think something's too good for her. Mm-hmm. She doesn't do that, but my point is, that generation is still there, and they're still mentoring, and they're still doing things. But this, maybe it'll change when they get there, but the generation behind them doesn't seem to be that way. And we're finding in a lot of older churches, older service groups are going away because people are not joining them of that age anymore. And
I've seen some of those that are down to a skeleton crew.
What's happening?
I know what's happening. I don't say I definitely know what's happening, but I know something that has had a huge influence on this change. And one of it has been a word that begins with A and ends with E. It's called affluence. And let me explain what I mean by that. That generation before, that 75-plus generation, they knew hardship. A lot of them came out of the Depression. A lot of them knew what it was like to do without, so therefore wanting to help people that didn't have. A lot of the people, they understood what it meant for people that mentored them. You know, one thing that's really, we've really gotten away from, and I think we may be starting to move back into a little bit, that older generation knew, was the word apprenticeship. Most businesses that you went into, you didn't have a college degree. You started in what they used to call, you know, start in the mailroom, and you've heard that, and go to the top. But you would start on the, and you would gradually, as you were mentored, come up through. I knew a guy one time that was, and I'm sure that he's no longer even here, but he was the last un-college-educated engineer at Battelle Memorial Institute. He was a full-fledged engineer, but had never been to college. My grandfather, my great-great-grandfather was had a boiler operator's license, which I have on my wall. He was a state-certified boiler operator, had never been to school, but he was actually the boiler operator at the huge resort hotel in Magnetic Springs. And that's what he did, but he had never been to school for that. And we had a lot of that. So as far as the mentoring goes, people understood what it meant to be brought up from the bottom and mentored. So you had that mentoring process. They knew what it was like to do without. So they wanted to help people out and give them a hand up. They knew the importance of that. Well, I think once you got into, just to kind of show the time period, once you got away from that World War II generation and got more into the post-Korea generation, the influence in America had really grown. We were now at least two-car households. We now had credit cards. We could buy things we couldn't afford to get them. New houses were selling like crazy. And everything was changing. People were able to buy new clothes rather than mom making their clothes. And all these things happened. And the family started moving away and finding jobs where they wanted them rather than saying, well, I got to stay close to home because I need to be there for mom and dad when they get older. So what happened was, as people went out to seek their own fortunes, and the focus started turning on what I want, me, me, me. It's about me. You can do it. Just do it. Look at all of our slogans. It's all about you going out with all the gusto you can, grabbing what you can, doing what you can, and it all focuses back on you. Well, when things focus on you, those civic organizations, for a lack of a better term, those do-gooder organizations aren't important anymore because it's about me, really.
You know what I've never understood, and maybe there is one that I'm not aware of, but is there any civic organization that has nothing to do with money? That, you know, they maybe they meet in a park, maybe they meet in a restaurant where they don't have to pay rent, they don't have to pay utilities, their group is not about raising money for other people, it's just simply to learn something. And if nothing else, the art of conversation, because that's going by the wayside.
You know, I think there is. I think that it depends on the groups. I know we have a we have something that is actually through our church association, but they meet at random places, you know, different places everywhere. And it is our, we have a group of people, and it is mostly retired people because they're the ones that are able to do it, but that they go out and we have a chainsaw crew, we have a babysitting crew, a communications crew, a laundry crew, a feeding crew, and these are people that come together and they learn and they teach each other and they are taught, and then when there's disasters around the United States, they just call each other and they go. There's no money that comes. They're not support. They're supported by their own money, whatever they do. And when it's time to go, they may raise money themselves within themselves to buy a shower trailer or a washing machine trailer or whatever the needs may be. But they just, it's a phone thing. They call each other and they get up and go. So that's just one of those organizations. But I think there are those out there. Unfortunately, I know that when you look at like the Lions Club, you know, none of those people that meet and, you know, they have the glasses drive, they do the glasses, and what's the other, hearing aids, I think they do. But they're big into that and helping people and scholarships locally. But, you know, none of those people in those local groups get paid.
No, and it's I'm not saying the financials of it are bad at all. I mean, the Cancer Society's got to have money, the Diabetes Society's got to have money.
But they don't all raise money.
No, but I'm not, and Lions Club with you know, eyeglasses and dogs and all that sort of thing. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just curious that if money was not involved in a group, that you didn't have to pay dues, that you weren't expected to go raise money, that you didn't have to provide anything, would people show up to that?
No.
I don't know.
And the reason I say no is this. I learned a long time ago, and I think some of those older people, those wisdom people would tell you this. People do not get involved if they don't have skin in the game.
Well, and that's, see, this is what comes back to a conversation from a few weeks ago. Do people give money to help? It does help. But do they give it to help, or do they give it to feel good about themselves?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, for some reason, money and investment of whatever it is seems to tell us, okay, I've got to do this now. For instance, if you were given a ticket to a football game by someone random, you think, I'll get, take it or leave it.
That's
Calvin. Huh? Use Calvin. Frank would Calvin. But if you went out and spent $60 on that ticket, you'd probably plan to make sure that you went because you had skin in the game. You see what I mean? I think that we find that one of the reasons we know why we do dues and things, people have to, things have to operate.
They do.
I think that is, it goes back to that old thing. If a kid raises money on a paper route and buys himself a bicycle, he's going to take care of it. If mom and dad just go out and hand him that bike and he knows that if he wrecks it, he'll get a new one, he's not going to take care of it. And I think that's a simplistic way to look at it. But I think that it's just a fact that when we invest in the things that we do, when we have personal investment, be it time or money, we have a tendency to be more involved than someone that just doesn't have anything in it. Because, look, I have no obligation to that because, you know, I don't have anything in it.
Well, this comes back to the older generation thing that we're talking about here. I knew a lady who was an Ohio State alumni. She graduated in 1931, I think. But she always got Ohio State season tickets because she wanted to give to the alumni. If she went to a game, it was rare. But she, every year, she had nephews, she had nieces, she had friends, and she would give the tickets away. And it was interesting to me because sometimes she would give the tickets to a group that she was involved in to auction off. And when that happened, if she would give Ohio State and, you know, Nebraska, it would bring in a certain amount of money, certainly worthwhile. But if it was Ohio State, Michigan, whoo, the money came rolling on in. So I always wondered.
Sounds like she was a smart lady.
A smart lady. But my question always was, now are the people who are donating to this cause donating because they want to help the cause, or do they want the tickets? Which I guess, it, you know, motivation in the end really doesn't matter. It raises the money.
You know, I tell you an interesting story. I hope she doesn't mind me sharing this. My sister, my oldest sister, when she was in college back in the late 60s, there was a man that donated to students. He was very, very, very wealthy, never been married, I don't believe. His parents had a lot of money when the Depression hit, and they bought up utility stock everywhere, major stock, when it was nothing. And because of that, they became extremely wealthy. And this man decided that he wanted to help college students that could not afford college. So my sister was one of those that he helped with some scholarships. And she met him a few times. But after that, over the years, she kept in contact with him through phone calls, Christmas cards, letters, what back and forth. That meant so much to him because he truly wanted to help the students to help the students. And he wasn't doing it for a slap, a pat on the back. Matter of fact, the guy was kind of a recluse. He was one of those kind of people that didn't like to be touched. So he was like white gloves and away from people. But he did it because he truly wanted to help. And I think people do that. But you know, let me look at something. I'll give you another good example. And I'm gonna pick on my granddaughter. I'm so proud of her. She graduates on the 19th from OSU Marion. She's already been hired as a school teacher. And to start the first of the year, but she her parents did not have the money. They're raising six kids. They did not have the money to put her through college. She did not want any student debt. She knew that was a sinker right there. So she started early on, working very hard, saving money. All through college, she worked constantly. When she wasn't in school, she was working a job. She applied for every grant she could. Didn't get any student loan money. That was out. And when she graduates on the 19th, she is already, her college is paid for, and it is completely debt-free coming out of it. Now, why did she put her nose to the grindstone? By the way, she's graduating 6 months early. Why did she put her nose to the grindstone and work so hard? Because she had something, light at the end of the tunnel she could see, and she knew if I work really, really hard, above and beyond, for 3 or 4 years, I can do this thing. And she did. Now, on the other hand, there's other students that she went to school with that parents said, you know, don't worry about it. I don't want you to stress about school. I don't want you to stress about the money. You know, you're going to school. It's being paid for. Don't worry. And the majority of them never made it through the first year, partied, had a good time, and blew it. Why? Because there was no skin in the game. And I think that, you know, when you look at that older generation, my granddaughter has been brought up by listening to older people and having those mentors herself. Matter of fact, her grandmother, Jan, is a good great-grandmother, is a good mentor to her. And seeing other people in her family and in her life and what they've gone through, and she paid attention to that as a young person. So I think that older generation, they just were involved out of necessity originally, and they understood what it meant to help. And we have a generation now that, especially right now, that is what I call, what most people call, an entitlement generation. I grew up, there were a lot of things I couldn't have, and I knew I couldn't have them, and it never bothered me because we weren't in that financial class to have those things. So it never entered my mind that I should have them. I knew how much that my dad didn't make as much money as someone else's dad. And that was okay because that's who we were and what we did. I never thought anything less of myself and grew up knowing that I could become anything I wanted to. But my dad made a choice to do this. And because of that, we only had this. And I watched some of my friends get the new things that I couldn't get and have the nice things that I couldn't get. But I understood it. And I think that we lived in a time when that was understood. Now we've come into a time where there's supposedly this great equalizer. And I'll give you an example. I know a young man right now that through high school, he had a free cell phone because of the income situation. Everything was at Christmas time. They had everyone helping him at, you know, blah, blah, blah. It went on and on. And he never saw that example of, you know, it was kind of like, why should I do anything? I get it anyway. And he has now been out of school a year and a half, and he's not worked one day yet, and he's staying up in his room playing video games. And matter of fact, I know a couple guys like that, quite frankly. But so if you think I'm talking about you out there, that I know you, probably somebody else. But if you think I'm talking about you, get it together. But anyway, the point being, when you are given everything and you are entitled to everything, you're not going to do anything. But the truth is, when you know that hard work pays, and you learn that from that older generation, and you know that other people are more important than you also. I was talking about my granddaughter. I got to keep bragging on her for a minute. One of the things that she did is she would clean houses while she was going to school to earn money for school. And a lot of them were elderly people. And the elderly people, even shut-ins that she cleaned for, could not wait for her to come. And it wasn't because she was cleaning their house. It was because the visit she had with them when she cleaned their house. And they just thought she was such a special young lady, because she is. But that's something, Scott, that we have to get back into our culture at some point. It's got us, the me's got to stop at some point. And I've said this, and I've said this many times over, that when you reach out and help other people, it does far more for you internally than it ever does to just worry about you.
You know what's interesting, though, and I, talking about generations here, and there'll be no way to prove this for about 40 years, but my belief is, and again, this is not a blanket statement because there's successes and failures in every generation, but I believe that the generation that was born in the 60s and the 70s, if you look at that group, that is the group that's about to become the elder group.
Right.
And that group is strangely, their parents, I think, were the parents of the World War II generation.
Yes.
And some of them suffered very hard times because there wasn't a lot of things. And I think they went out and tried to do better than their parents. I don't think that was subconsciously.
And they blew it. They went overboard.
Well, I don't know if
I was of that generation. I remember it well.
Well, but you know what I think it is what I see in them is that they did go out and get managerial positions, and they did start working right out of college at restaurants and things, and they're unhappy now because they're approaching retirement. They didn't do what they wanted to do in life. They never even took a shot at it because they were very driven to do better than their parents. It was just a different thing. But the generation that's coming up now, one thing I will say about them that I see is, much like your granddaughter, who's a part of that generation, they seem to, again, have the expectation of, I might take the job that pays less because I want to do that job. I don't think that 60s and 70s generation did that. Or didn't do
it
a whole lot.
Interesting. In talking to my granddaughter, she decided to work in a particular place where she was going to apply to, and the reason being, it wasn't because it paid the best. It was because I feel I can have the greatest impact as a teacher with this group of kids, and they need me, and that's why she did it.
Right. And I think that there's a lot of
isn't
those.
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful?
But
you know, it's interesting. One of the problems that I think you see with, and I'll call it my generation, I was born in 1958, so you can lump me in that group.
I put you right in there.
I'm not a 60, but I'm real close.
Yeah.
I think Frank was born in 54?
53.
But anyway, I think that the problem with our generation was the thing that we put first and foremost in what we did and being driven was money.
Right.
And the bottom line is money. Folks, listen to me well. Money does not make you happy. It never will.
That's
happiness
it.
Does not have a dollar sign with it. Now, yes, the dollars can make things easier. It's nice to have your bills paid. But if you are driven for money and not driven for putting other people and enjoying life and take it, we are designed by God to be people, not money people. And we are designed to love each other, to help each other, to reach out for, and to better ourselves. And when we don't do that, we're not going to be happy. And that's the problem with my generation is those people, they did everything they could and to make money, and they made it, and they got it. And now what happened was they passed it on. They did everything they could for their kids because they wanted them to have the new bicycle every year. They wanted them to have nice clothes that they didn't have. They didn't want to have jeans with holes in them, all those kind of things. And what happened was then the kids grew up. They expected that. And mom and dad get to a certain age. They can't do everything for them anymore. And sadly enough, what ends up happening is the kids are just sitting around waiting on mom and dad to die so they can get the rest of it. And if you don't believe me, talk to someone that works in a nursing home about the people that don't get any visitors and they don't hear from anyone until that person dies, and then all of a sudden it just, you know what I mean? So I think that it's the money issue. I think that we were money focused. When we became materialistic focused in my generation, the baby boomer generation, right? When we became material focused, what happened was, we lost our love.
But you know, the baby boomers' kids, even though they did get given a lot of stuff that their parents didn't have, they do seem to be a little more involved, not in materialistic things. They seem to be more involved in, I'm going to do what makes me happy. And I think that is the right way.
Well,
To be happy.
2 points I want to make real quick. One first one is this. Folks, you're not calling in and sharing with me who is your mentor.
That's
now,
right. Oh, yeah,
if it takes
true.
A prize to get you to call in, shame on you. You know, this is something you can share, so call in and tell me who your mentor was. But anyway, the other thing is that I think that we became so there's a huge thing we're missing here that we haven't brought up that happened with that baby boomer generation. And now I'm going to be called, I'm going to be called a chauvinist and what else? Misogynistic. Anyway, moms started going to work in a much greater number than ever did before. And that's great. Ladies, if you want to work and have a career, that's wonderful. Clear back in Bible times, you know, God used Lydia in a great way, and she was a seller of purple. She was an unbelievable businesswoman. And so I'm not some church guy that's knocking women working. I'm saying that's great. What I'm saying is this, because so many kids no longer had that guidance from mom at home and were just shifted off to a babysitter, and that happened in widespread numbers. What's happened from that, a lot of people kids grew up without the close familial contact that they may have had before. And what I'm saying is, a lot of kids, mom and dad were working so hard, they were working overtime. Not only were the kids were taken to the babysitter, but they might even be dropped off at grandma and grandpa's when they got out of the babysitter, so mom and dad were still at work. And mom and dad are so worn out on the weekend that they just don't want to be bothered, and they just want to sit there and watch TV. And the kids were kind of left to socially, in many ways, raise themselves. So the kids, once again, you're going to come back to that me. It's going to be about me, because no one else seems to worry about me, so I'll worry about me. I'll take what I can get, and I'll do that. And I think that we missed a lot of the nurturing that came from moms. And nurturing can come from dads. You guys understand. You know me. I'm not saying that. You know where I'm coming from. And I think that you're seeing today, I know in my family, in my generation, my siblings all worked, male and female. They all worked, had careers, jobs, and that was seemed to be expected. With my children's generation, right now I have one that is a stay-at-home mom that has worked in the before. She's very capable of working. She's a very bright lady. She chooses to be home until her kids are done with school. I have another one that is a she just never slows down. She's a mom. She works. She doesn't work every day. So some days she's home and just very plugged into her kids. And I have another daughter that's been a part-time stay at home when the kids were little. She's just now back to work a couple of years ago. She had worked for the children's services when she was younger, and she left that field when they had her kids and was. So my point is, there's a lot of women today that are recognizing, you know what, I think it'd be better for my kids if we stayed home with them and helped them get a start in life, and they're recognizing that, and more women are doing it now. Do they go back into the workforce and into career fields? I think one of my daughters right now, who is 35, is considering going back to school to either get her teaching degree or a nursing degree. So it's not like they're staying permanently at home, but they're seeing that need. And I think that we missed that in that baby boomer generation. You know, there are so many kids that just didn't get that family contact that they lost that. But I am very grateful and thankful. We're out of time. I am thankful for our senior citizens we got to learn from. God bless you guys. Have a great Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you all, and I will talk to you next Friday.
Address, 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number, 740-225-4495. Webpage, crtmechanicals.com.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday.